It was like having butterfly wings next to her skin. She sat before the mirror and let the woman put up her hair in a chignon. When her soft touch threatened to send Sarah into an emotional tailspin, she remembered sitting at the asylum and concentrated on her breathing. Air in, air out. Nellie knocked at the door and smiled when she saw her.
Well, don't you look a treat.
Can we have supper in here? Sarah asked. I'm not sure if I can be out in public. I don't feel like myself.
Nellie shook her head. You'll do fine. I've booked a table in the corner, just for the two of us. This is a posh hotel. No one will bother you.
Downstairs, Nellie led the way across the parquet floor to their table, and Sarah sat with her back to the room so as not to attract any more attention than she possibly could. Nellie ordered their dinner, and then dove into the details.
After I got out, I did some digging into your story. Did you know that just a few months after you'd been taken off, another worker at the Dakota had been sent to jail for stealing from tenants?
Who was that?
A Miss Daisy Kavanaugh.
Sarah inhaled sharply. Not Daisy. That couldn't be.
Apparently, she'd been filching things for some time. They found a stash of timepieces, hair clips, rings, in her room. Like a raccoon, drawn to shiny things.
But they found the necklace I was supposed to have stolen in my desk drawer. Daisy had been Sarah's one friend and confidant since coming to America, and they had grown ever closer since the loss of the girl's mother.
What if she was set up as well? I knew Daisy. She was a good girl. She wouldn't have done such a thing.
She admitted it, and is now in prison.
Daisy had been upset when Mr. Douglas had not increased her wages after her mother's death. But would she really resort to stealing from the tenants? And even worse, let Sarah take the blame for her misdeeds? Unimaginable. But something else nagged at Sarah. Their food arrived. Sarah waited until the servers were out of earshot.
If Daisy did admit to the crimes, why didn't anyone come for me? Set me free?
The agent at the Dakota, Mr. Douglas, told everyone you'd gone back to England. The last thing he wanted was to set you free and have you make a fuss.
She took a bite of roast beef and moaned.
Delicious. In any event, he's no longer the agent at the Dakota. Not after it got out in the papers.
What exactly got out?
Sarah's stomach hurt. She couldn't imagine eating anything right now. It wasn't enough for my own experience to be told. I also wanted to get you free, to right an injustice. And to do so, I had to write about what happened to you.
What did you write about me?
Sarah's mind reeled. The affair, the baby.
Nellie was an intrepid journalist, and she already knew so much. Sarah had been brutally honest when they spoke in that dank cell.
I'll show you the story when we get back upstairs.
She caught Sarah's eye.
Don't worry. I wrote that you were a good lady, a proper one, who had been tossed away, and that when the real thief was exposed, no one bothered to release you from what was a cruel, terrible institution.
I see.
What's even better, as a show of remorse, the new agent of the Dakota is offering you your job back. They need to get on the right side of the public, you see. So you'll be reinstated as Lady Managerette as soon as you're ready.
Nellie's face glowed with pleasure.
Sarah began to shake.
I couldn't go back. I couldn't.
Nellie reached over and covered her hand with her own. No need to make any decisions right now. I imagine the re-entry into regular life is going to be a difficult one, after you've spent the past 7 months thinking all was lost. I was there for 10 days, and I'm still not sure which end is up. Sleep and rest, and we have a couple of days of hiding out here until you decide what you want to do next. I don't belong here. I'm not of this ilk. It's all too much. Trust me. You'll get used to it fast enough. Tomorrow there's someone who wants to see you. If you're up to it. Who? A man who contacted me the day your story was published. He said you'd want to see him. A Mr. Theodore Camden. Sleep came fast that evening. Sarah collapsed into the down bedding and gave in to the warmth of the room, sensations that she'd only dreamed of at Blackwell's. She startled awake at dawn, the image of Natalia crying, driving her out of a deep slumber. How could she have left her behind? And so many others. Nellie arrived an hour later, followed by waitstaff carrying trays of breakfast food for them. More than either would be able to eat. Potato omelets, egg toast, biscuits. Sarah's eyes welled up at the gluttony laid out on the table. Don't cry, please don't cry. Nellie sat back. I need you to toughen up. We'll take advantage of your fame, and this will all be behind you before you know it.
I can't imagine I'll ever forget Blackwell's. What I saw there.
For the first time it dawned on her what a risk Nellie had taken by being voluntarily admitted.
Why did you do it? Did you know what you were getting into?
Nellie spooned some jam onto a triangle of toast. Not really. I'd heard rumors. But I'm not one to report on tea parties or the latest gowns from Paris. My editors know that, and I knew they would protect me.
Still, what if you'd been lost like I was?
I was more valuable to my editors on the outside, exposing what was going on. They wouldn't have dared leave me behind.
I envy you, in control of your own life.
Sarah shook her head.
I thought I was doing the same, but look what happened.
It wasn't your fault. Remember that and stay strong. You have a lot of decisions to make. Nellie poured her some coffee and insisted she eat a hard-boiled egg. Sarah did as she was told, luxuriating in the slipperiness of the egg white, in contrast to the chalky yolk on her tongue, as good as caviar. She knew what she wanted to do first off.
I'll need to speak with Mr. Camden.
Right. He wants you to come to his offices.
Hardenberg's office.
He gave me the address. I'll bring you there. Nellie expertly extracted them from the hotel out the back door, avoiding the wolf pack of journalists, and into a waiting hack. They pulled up in front of a building on Madison Avenue in the 40s. He said it's on the second floor. I'll stay in the carriage. Sarah welcomed the darkness of the stairway and didn't pass another soul before arriving at the door marked Theo Camden, architect. He'd gone into business for himself. She turned the doorknob and found herself standing in a large room that contained an empty desk and a leather armchair. An open door on the far wall led to a smaller office. Theo came flying toward her before she could even register who he was.
Sarah, you're free.
If she had any qualms about how they ought to greet each other after so long apart, she had no time to question what to do, as he pulled her to him and held her close. Her entire body erupted in convulsive sobs. He stroked her hair and spoke words that soothed, but it was no good. She'd dreamed of this moment for so long. All of the pain and anguish poured out of her. But even more, she cried because he hadn't forgotten her after all. He reached into his pocket and handed her his handkerchief.
Come into my office.
He led her to a settee opposite a large desk covered with drawings, never letting go of her hands.
My God, what you've been through. If I'd only known. When I spoke with Mr. Douglas, he said he'd offered you the opportunity to return home, and you left on the next ship back to England. I hoped you might send me a letter, but when none came, I figured you were done with New York. Done with me.
Mr. Douglas lied.
He locked me away so that the scandal wouldn't taint the Dakota.
You've suffered so much. I read the papers, what you went through.
She looked away. No one on the outside could truly understand. I have friends there who need help. Like me, they were locked away for no reason at all.
The mayor and the commission are looking into it. There's been a huge outcry. That reporter has single-handedly changed the course of events.
Nellie, she saved me. Theo shook his head.
It should have been me. I should have been the one who saved you.
No, you couldn't have known.
Are you all right? Now, I mean. Did they hurt you?
She thought of the baby. To have felt it grow in her womb and then have nothing left, nothing in her arms, was the worst pain she'd ever experienced. Her body shook.
Are you cold?
No, I'm fine. Better now. She'd never tell him about the child. Theo's face darkened.
Mrs. Camden is terribly sorry that you were falsely accused. She wanted to apologize in person, but I'm afraid she's taken ill. The doctor says it's bilious fever, and recommended she go upstate to recover and rest, away from the city. The children are with her.
I see. Sarah couldn't shake the idea that she'd been behind the scheme, in some way.
As soon as I saw the article, I knew I had to find you.
It consoles me to think that you cared enough to think about me while I was away. To wonder.
Of course. I'd go up on the roof of the Dakota and stare across the park, hoping to see someone with your gait, your coloring, that you might return one day.
To think I was on Blackwell's Island the whole time, staring into the distance at the outline of the Dakota. You can see it from there, did you know?
We were looking at each other but didn't know it.
How she'd missed him. She looked away, intoxicated at being so near to him after all this time, but embarrassed too. Sadly, yes. She forced a laugh. But I'm out. Now I have to figure out what to do. I don't like being the center of attention.
It will work in your favor, you know. The new agent at the Dakota is intent on hiring you back, to show the rest of the city that you have been absolved.
Who is in charge now?
Mrs. Haynes.
Best to keep it that way. I'm sure she's doing a lovely job.
She doesn't have many friends, if that's what you mean.
Daisy's jolly hello each morning, her way of making the most arduous task seem enjoyable, came to mind. They had made a good team. What about Daisy? Theo frowned.
She's been put away for good. At Blackwell's Island Women's Prison, strangely enough.
How do we know Daisy wasn't set up by Mr. Douglas, too? She wasn't one to steal anything. I knew her well.
Are you sure?
His expression was guarded.
There was something he wasn't telling her.
What do you mean?
Mrs. Haynes told us that a couple of months after Daisy's run-in with the intruder, she saw her walking with the same man in Central Park.
Sarah thought about it. The night that Daisy had been attacked, something had seemed off. The man's lack of urgency when he was discovered to begin with. The way Daisy avoided Sarah's gaze. She knew him, had invited him to her room, then pretended to have been attacked when he'd got caught. Sarah and Mrs. Haynes had come running to her defense, as if she were a damsel in distress. Sarah wondered what else she'd gotten wrong, what else Daisy had been up to. Why didn't Mrs. Haynes tell anyone?
Daisy's mother died soon after, so she decided to put off confronting her until after the holidays. And then...
He paused.
Well...
Right. Then everything had come tumbling down. Daisy had to support a large family. Maybe that's why she stole. Shouldn't that be taken into account?
Theo rubbed his brow.
After everything you've been through, you're worried about Daisy.
He was right. If it were true, and everyone seemed to be convinced of it, then Daisy had taken advantage of Sarah's trust and vulnerability.
She stood and looked about the room.
You've done well for yourself.
I thought it was time for me to stand on my own two feet. More importantly, Hardenburg finally came through.
When did you set up shop?
A few months ago. I'm afraid clients aren't exactly breaking down my door.
He shook his head.
But I refuse to do more of the same. I want to create buildings for the coming century, not this one. Here, look at my ideas.
He grabbed a sketchbook from his desk and handed it to her. She leafed through the pages, unsettled by the feel of him standing so close beside her. This one is quite lovely.
A library.
He drew his finger along the roofline.
Any ornamentation is also structural, like these pillars.
Another turn of the page.
Here is an office building for the city, made out of concrete. The smooth surface draws the eye upward, into the sky.
It is breathtaking.
The city would be transformed. It's a completely different way of looking at the world.
He looked down at her.
I knew you'd understand. I imagine block after block of these, each with their own personality, but not fighting each other the way the big mansions do now along Fifth Avenue.
He sat beside her, no longer looking down at the pages.
If you won't go back to the Dakota to work, would you work for me? As my office manager, or managerette, whatever you want to call it. Granted, there's not a lot to do right now, but together we'll make it all work. I need you beside me, you see.
A lump lodged in her chest. I couldn't do that. It would attract too much attention.
I don't care about that. In fact, I could use the attention.
It wouldn't be right. What about Mrs. Camden?
She felt terrible when the truth came out. She has a larger perspective on what is important. To her, it's the children. To me, it's my work. You see, we have never been very happy together. We've reached an understanding, you might say.
She doesn't know about me. About us.
No, of course not.
Sarah considered her choices. She could take over Mrs. Haynes's job at the Dakota, but that would be a step backward. Working with Theo on his new projects would be fulfilling. And dangerous. We couldn't ever do what we did that one night. Her boldness made her turn red, and the heat crawled up the back of her neck.
He looked away. Of course not. I understand that. But we'd work well together, don't you think?
She didn't respond.
What about this? What if I got you an apartment at the Dakota? There's one on the sixth floor that's vacant, as the tenants both passed away last month.
The Rembrandts? Sarah remembered them. A much older couple devoted to each other, who had taken the adventurous step to move uptown. She was sorry to hear they had died.
Yes. Once the press gets used to the idea that you are free and taken care of, living in the Dakota and working for me, we'd be able to go on with our lives. It's an opportunity seized from a tragedy.
I can't imagine living in the Dakota again. It would feel so strange.
But you must. They'll let you live there for a year, rent-free. I will insist.
You would?
Of course. It's the right thing to do. Please say yes, Sarah.
She'd come to America to do better, to improve her lot, and she had been betrayed and abused. But instead of giving in, she'd figured out how to survive under the most atrocious circumstances. Now she would get to work alongside the man she adored, live in a beautiful building befitting an earl's daughter, and no longer be in service. An opportunity seized from a tragedy. His words echoed in her ears.
Chapter 24. New York City, September 1985. Theodore Camden's murder, not surprisingly, had made big news back in 1885. The most sensational articles Bailey found were in the New York World. One stated that Sarah Smythe had been incarcerated earlier that year at Blackwell's Island Insane Asylum and released due to the intervention of a female journalist, Nellie Bly. After Sarah got out, she'd been hired as an assistant to Theodore Camden before savagely turning on him and stabbing him in the library of his Dakota apartment. Bailey spent hours at the public library, reading through Nellie Bly's accounts of her time at the asylum, which was located right across the East River on what was now known as Roosevelt Island. The graphic descriptions turned her stomach, as did the fact that alcoholics were often locked away in the workhouse on the island. How lucky she'd been to be born 100 years later. Sarah Smythe, who might very well be her great-grandmother, had been through a terrible ordeal. After all that, Christopher had never received the letter from her confirming that she was indeed his mother. Minnie had hidden it away from him. The injustice of it all left a sour taste in Bailey's mouth. But Renzo's warning stayed with Bailey. Maybe the letter was from Minnie. After all, it was found in her purse. The whole thing made Bailey's head buzz with confusion. Still, no matter who his mother was, Christopher's father was Theodore Camden. The letter was proof. Proof that Melinda wouldn't be able to deny. Melinda had always been vague about the amount of money in her trust fund. But surely there would be enough for both lines of the family to split the principal and still live well. Bailey would be able to put a security deposit down on a rental apartment, and maybe even pay back Tristan for the cost of Silver Hill. The luxury of a financial cushion to break her fall. Her cousin's brittle voice rang out as soon as she entered the Dakota apartment.
Where the hell have you been?
Melinda stood against the library window pane, smoking a cigarette. You really shouldn't smoke in here. Bailey had spent longer than she'd meant to at the library, and the doorman had warned her Melinda was upstairs. It's a fire hazard with all the work going on. Melinda inhaled again, her mouth forming a perfect pout.
It's fine. Why aren't the bamboo poles up yet?
Because I have to order them. It's not like you can go into the bamboo store and just buy them. These things take time. She studied Melinda closely. What's going on with you?
I'm hungry, and I've been waiting for you when I'm supposed to meet Tony for lunch.
Okay. Bailey spoke as if Melinda were a 2-year-old on the cusp of a major meltdown. What can I do for you, then?
I'm not sure about the koi pond anymore.
Thank God she'd seen the light.
That's fine. I think we can find a way to incorporate a really cool aquarium if you need fish.
A drilling noise threatened to bring down the walls. Melinda shouted above it.
But I don't want anything that looks like it belongs in the room of a disgruntled teenager. I want something that's grown up.
Bailey shouted back.
Of course. Let me work on it.
This was ridiculous.
Hey, I found something out that is amazing. I want to tell you about it. Can we talk outside? I'm late. You can come to lunch with me, though.
They met Tony at a bistro on Columbus. He was already seated and halfway through a martini. Once they'd ordered, Bailey dove in. I found something down in the basement of the Dakota. Something valuable. Tony swiveled his head back from watching their young French waitress sashay to the kitchen.
What might that be? A diamond tiara of Melinda's mum's?
I wish. Melinda turned to Tony. No, she's found some silly photo. Bailey's been digging around in the family business, trying to stir up trouble.
She had expected Melinda's resistance and pressed on. Down in the basement, there are 3 trunks. One belongs to Theodore Camden, One to his wife, Minnie, and one to the person who brutally stabbed him to death, Sarah Smythe. Tony perked up. She hadn't meant to be so dramatic, but she hated the way he had dismissed her. Melinda, on the other hand, rolled her eyes. Bailey ignored her. In one of the trunks, I found a letter, most likely from Sarah Smythe, that was written to the ward of Theodore and Minnie. It says that the ward, who was my grandfather, was her son. Hers and Theodore's. She waited a moment to let Tony wrap his head around the various branches of the family tree. Tony squinted.
Back up. Who's who? How many generations are you going back?
Four, if you can believe it. Theodore Camden had Luther Camden, who had Melinda and Manville's father. So Theodore Camden is Melinda and Manville's great-grandfather. What I'm suggesting is that Theodore Camden and this woman, Sarah Smythe, had Christopher Camden, who's my grandfather.
That means...
Tony trailed off. That I might also be Theodore's great-granddaughter.
Jesus, you've got to stop this. You can't tell anything by old letters. Let it go already.
Melinda lit another cigarette.
Tony, I was thinking it'd be fun to go up to Saranac, see the leaves changing, don't you think? We could do a weekend, just the two of us.
Hold on, I want to hear more.
Tony held up his hand.
Do you have the letter?
Bailey took an envelope from her handbag and opened it up. She pulled out the letter and laid it on the table, smoothing it out with care. Tony studied it and looked at Bailey.
It's hard to tell what the signature is. It's all blurry. Where was it found?
In a purse in Minnie's trunk. But it's obviously the word Sarah. Look, here's the S.
Huh.
He didn't seem convinced.
If it was written by her, how can you believe it? She obviously was a nut job.
He had a point. Melinda balanced her cigarette in the ashtray, perilously close to the letter.
You said you found something valuable. This is a piece of paper. I don't get it.
Bailey folded it back up and put it in the envelope. There's something else. Did you see the article in the paper about how they had to stop the work at Strawberry Fields because they found an antique knife? Tony nodded, and Melinda, who probably had never read a paper in her life, stared blankly. Well, we found the sheath that goes to it, in Theodore's trunk, as well as what we believe was Theodore Camden's finger, or what's left of it. Melinda put her finger down her throat and pretended to gag.
Gross!
Tony blinked.
What's the deal with the sheath?
They had a photo of the knife in the paper, and we're certain we have the sheath part of it.
Who's we?
Asked Melinda, suspicious. Renzo Duffy?
The super? Jesus Christ, Bailey, I told you to avoid him! How can I avoid him? I'm supervising construction in his building. It's not his building. The tenants, meaning me, own the building. The super is my employee.
As a matter of fact, the tenants of a co-op own shares in a building, not the actual building,
said Tony, always the expert. Bailey held her impatience at bay. Renzo was there when I opened the trunk, and he's been very helpful.
I don't want him in my business, Bailey. I told you that.
Tony interrupted again, thankfully.
Enough about the super. That knife is really valuable, which means the sheath is really valuable.
Melinda leaned forward.
How valuable?
Bailey spoke up, relieved that Melinda had been redirected from Renzo. The paper says the knife is worth $500,000. Right now it's at the Met, being studied and cleaned.
They'll want the sheath, right? To go with it?
Melinda's voice went up in pitch.
If it was found in my stuff, then it's mine, right?
She should have known this was the road the conversation would take. Melinda wanted nothing to do with their possible blood bond. I thought you'd be interested in the idea that we might be truly related. Don't you think that's amazing? That maybe we're second cousins or something like that?
Melinda put her hand on Bailey's. Your mother desperately wanted you to be part of the Camden family. And after she died, I get why you feel compelled to carry on her wishes. We don't know if we're really cousins, and we may never know. But I will always think of you as my sister, no matter what.
Talk about a brush off.
Where's the sheath now?
Tony finished his drink in one gulp. At the Dakota with Renzo.
What? You left it with the super?
Melinda dug her nails into Bailey's hand.
Ouch! Yes, it's fine. He's trustworthy. He has a safe in his office. That's where it is.
Tony tossed his napkin on the table.
Let's go check it out before he sells it on the underground market.
Renzo gave Bailey a huge smile when she walked into his office, but it faded fast when he spotted Melinda and Tony behind her.
Where's the knife sheath thing?
Melinda spoke to him like he was a servant and she was the lady of the manor. Bailey offered Renzo a half-hearted smile of apology.
I told them about the knife and they'd like to see what we found. Okay.
He blocked the safe from their view as he fiddled with the combination. After he yanked it open, Tony crowded forward, eager. They were like vultures, he and Melinda. Tony practically licked his lips as Renzo placed the two tissue-wrapped packages on the desk. He unfolded the larger one. The sheath, a battered remnant of a long-ago era, gleamed in the light.
It doesn't look that great, said Melinda.
She pointed to it.
What's that? Mud?
Bailey shook her head. I think it might be blood. Theodore Camden's blood. There's a set of plans in the same trunk, covered with splotches that look like blood. Melinda pulled back her hand, as if the stain might leap out at her.
Ick!
Renzo picked up the newspaper on his desk, the same one he'd shown Bailey, and pointed to the photo.
It's a perfect match.
Totally.
Melinda put her hands on her hips.
What do we do now?
Tony wrapped one arm around Melinda's shoulders.
Anything you want to do, it's yours. Find us keepers, right?
She grinned up at him.
If it was in my storage unit, it belongs to me.
Don't you think it should end up with the knife at the Met? Bailey looked over at Renzo for backup, but he stayed silent. Ultimately, I mean.
If they want it, they should pay for it,
answered Tony. No question that Bailey had seen dollar signs when she'd first realized how much the thing was worth, but Tony and Melinda's crassness made her think twice. Someone made the weapon with their own hands before it traveled around the world and ended up in New York City. Think of the history of this piece of metal. Imagine where it's been and who's owned it. Who cares? Melinda lifted it up with her finger and thumb, avoiding the cracked blood on it.
It's all rusty and dented and filthy.
Bailey cringed at her carelessness, holding her breath until Melinda returned it to the tissue. Of course, the sheath would be what interested Tony and Melinda, not that Bailey might be a relation.
There's a problem, though.
Renzo finally spoke, his voice quiet and deep.
With the sheath. Oh, yes? What's that?
Tony looked bemused, as if Renzo was a stammering idiot.
It wasn't found in your storage unit.
Melinda put one hand on her hip.
It was in my great-grandfather's trunk. That's what Bailey said.
But the trunk was in the building storage area, not yours.
Bailey couldn't believe he was challenging them. The trunks were obviously part of the Camden household. Then again, it was found in the room where people stored things they no longer wanted, that were no longer considered valuable. He's right. It wasn't in the unit.
Then who does it belong to, if not to me? Demanded Melinda.
The co-op, I would assume.
Melinda looked like she was about to spit in his face.
Show me where you found it.
Renzo led the way to the room with the trunks. They opened up each one and Melinda tore through them, tossing ball gowns and shoes and leather tubes on the ground. Bailey rescued the silk purse from being snatched up by Melinda.
Be careful, these are all antiques. Don't tell me what's valuable and what's not. You show me this stuff, and now he's telling me it's not mine? Give me a break. All this is mine.
No, it's not. I'm sorry, but we'll have to go through the management company on this.
Renzo held his palms up and shrugged.
That's the way it works.
Unexpectedly, Renzo turned on his heels and walked out of the room. Tony sprinted behind him but had a late start. When Bailey got to the office, Renzo was standing in front of the closed safe, no sheath in sight.
You can't do that,
Melinda sputtered, thrown by his sudden maneuvering.
You're holding it hostage.
Until we hear from the management company, that's where it stays.
At first, Bailey couldn't figure out where Renzo was coming from. He hated Melinda, so it must have given him some satisfaction to take something away from her. But it was obvious, even to Bailey, that the sheath came from a Camden trunk. Why make such a fuss? Maybe, like Bailey, he didn't want to see Melinda separate the knife and the sheath. He was holding it hostage, so she wouldn't. She had to hand it to him. He had nerve, challenging a tenant like Melinda. Tony studied Renzo with a renewed interest.
You say we have to prove that it's the Camden's knife?
Renzo shrugged.
You'll have to ask the co-op about that. Mr. Rogers is the board president. I would assume you should take it up with him.
How do we know you won't make off with it in the meantime? Demanded Melinda.
Wait a minute.
Tony held a finger to his cleft chin.
What if we could prove beyond a doubt that this was Theodore Camden's?
How are we going to do that?
Melinda turned to Bailey.
Did you find anything that might be proof? A photo of him holding it or anything like that?
No, there's nothing like that.
What about in my storage unit?
That's empty.
Just my luck.
Melinda stared hard at Renzo.
Then we go to the management company. I'll fight for this. No one is going to take it away from me.
You won't have to fight for it,
said Tony.
As I was trying to say, we can prove that it is yours.
How?
My cousin can test the finger bone in blood for DNA and compare it to yours, Melinda.
Tony smiled as though he'd solved the famine crisis in Ethiopia.
Where do you get my DNA from?
Your blood.
Melinda gave a dramatic shiver, but Tony continued on.
It's called DNA fingerprinting.
Will that be considered proof, though? Asked Bailey. Tony nodded.
You bet. It's already been used in an immigration case in England to reunite some kid with his mother.
Everything was moving too fast. Blood, bones, DNA. But Tony was all business.
I'll ring my cousin and find out how this all works. Melinda, in the meantime, check with the management company and your family advisor.
Fred?
Yes. You'll want to make sure this is all on the up and up.
This was Bailey's chance. I have a request. Melinda looked at Bailey like she was a bother, an irritant, which wasn't fair. Bailey had been the one who'd found everything, who set all this in motion. If it weren't for her curiosity, the trunks would have stood in the corner for another 100 years untouched.
What's that, dear?
The coldness in Melinda's voice stung. I'd like my DNA to be compared as well.
That way we'll know whether or not I'm a Camden.
Melinda laughed.
You've got to be kidding. No.
Just no, no discussion?
Tony moved closer.
This is a very new test, and it's quite expensive. If you have the money to pay for it, go right ahead, but if I'm paying for it, then I don't want to add to the expense any more than I need to. You understand, surely.
But it's your cousin who's doing it. Don't you get a family discount?
My cousin invented the process, but it will be his lab that will be doing the testing. Someone has to pay for all that work.
His voice dripped with condescension. Bailey had no way of knowing if he was speaking the truth, but it made sense that this kind of scientific process would be expensive. The possibility of an inheritance appealed to Bailey's practical side, sure, but that wasn't the only reason for her brashness. The hunger of discovering the truth about her birthright gnawed at her in a way that put her other addictions to shame. Although from the outside it probably looked like she was replacing one obsession with another, this wasn't about sublimating harsh truths with intoxicants. The loss of her mother had put her on a dangerous path, and Bailey was certain that if she figured out who she really was, the future might be less treacherous. But if it turns out I am a Camden, I'll be able to pay you back. She was practically begging, and hated Renzo to see her this way. She avoided looking at him.
No, darling, cooed Melinda. I can't do that. You must understand. You have no proof, not really, other than a letter from God knows who. You're clutching at straws, and I can understand why. You've been dealt a tough hand lately, but I know you'll do fine. You always do.
She stood no chance. No chance at all. When she finally glanced over at Renzo, he looked angry. She'd never wanted a drink more in her life.
Chapter 25. New York City, August, 1885. The new agent at the Dakota made good on the promise of a year of free rent. Sarah had moved into the sixth-floor apartment, still furnished with the yellow velvet French settees and matching club chairs of the Rembrandts. The place offered a glorious view north, and she appreciated the cool shade during the hot August afternoons. Sarah had received a jubilant letter from Natalia a week earlier, saying that she'd been released and was living in Boston with her children, where she'd found work as a housekeeper for a kind widow. For that, Sarah gave a silent thanks. Mrs. Haynes and Sarah had talked in the office when she'd first arrived, right after Mrs. Haynes had dashed around the desk and hugged her. A tear even dropped down Mrs. Haynes's cheek, an unexpected show of emotion after her previously cold visage. They didn't discuss Daisy at all, or what had happened, but Mrs. Haynes had gone out of her way to make sure Sarah was well taken care of, sending up a maid with breakfast in bed for her each morning, her plate heaped with hot cross buns and baked eggs. Sarah's hair was thickening as she grew stronger, as was her waist, and her skin began to glow again. Every so often she'd still wake in the middle of the night, terrified and breathless, thinking she was trapped on the island again. But that seemed to be the only lasting vestige of her incarceration. She enjoyed having a proper job, with her own desk and chair waiting for her each day. Unfortunately, for the past month, the only people to visit CO's office came under the ruse of needing an architect, but in fact actually wanted to get a look at the woman who'd survived Blackwell's Island Insane Asylum. They never returned. Perhaps we should rethink our arrangement. Sarah had been longing to say the words out loud for the past week now, and when CO suggested they not go into the office, but instead work from his apartment in the Dakota, she decided it was time. Even he couldn't face the effort of pretending to work anymore. There was absolutely nothing to do. Theo had bills to pay, for the grand apartment and his wife's medical care. She'd seen a letter to the old Chatham sanatorium that he'd inadvertently left out on his desk, asking for more time for the coming month's fee. Theo looked up at her and smiled.
Rethink the arrangement? In what way?
There's no use you having an employee when business is... She trailed off, reluctant to state the obvious.
Bad. Disastrous.
I'm sorry, Theo. She sat down across the table from him, where he'd been working on a speech to the West End Association. But there's no reason for you to pay me when I don't do much of anything. I can find another job. Theo leaned back.
No one knows me. I'm just a lackey of Hardenberg's. I have to find a way to make a name for myself.
What can I do to help?
Not a thing, I'm afraid.
She hated feeling so useless and out of step with him. They hadn't touched since she'd collapsed in his arms upon reuniting. Even when she handed him a paper or letter, she made sure to place it on his desk first, so their fingers wouldn't accidentally brush. Theo got up and stood at the window, looking out.
Imagine what it'll be like here in 100 years, what this view will entail.
I can't imagine. Flying bicycles, perhaps?
Now that would be a sight. But the buildings, one after another, lined up block upon block. If we're not careful, the city will fall into madness. A mishmash of styles, from Florentine Renaissance to transitional Goth to Hispano-Moorish. What a mess. Here we have an opportunity to plan ahead, to decide the aesthetic fate of the city. Yet no one is leading the charge.
Why don't you? He turned around and leaned back on the windowsill.
Who would listen to me? What have I accomplished?
Your speech. She pointed to the half-full piece of paper on his desk. Why don't you make it about exactly that? The city of the future?
Unfortunately, tonight's audience doesn't care much about that. They all want to know how to make the most money snatching up land on the West Side.
Then make them care. You speak so passionately about it. She pulled the paper and inkwell to her. Go on, you talk, and I'll write.
It's no use.
She disliked this version of Theo. He seemed determined to fail. In the past, she might have agreed with him, assumed that he knew better on most things. But after Blackwell's, she no longer accepted another's authority so easily. First off, what are today's architects doing wrong? He paced up the room and back down. His long legs took only 10 strides each way, his footsteps sure and even.
The center of the island is currently located at the southern tip. The courts, the post office, the exchange. Even with elevated railways, the congestion is terrible. Everyone struggling south in the morning and back north at the end of the workday. The business district should be moved up to the 40s, near Broadway.
Very forward-thinking. What else? His shoulders straightened and he looked up at the ceiling, lost in thought.
There's no point in having each plot of land owned by a separate person. Instead, we should continue in the mold of the apartment house and create large buildings, vertical ones, that house dozens of businesses. We need to add an entirely new dimension to our thinking, and that's upward. Imagine a city of buildings that soar into the sky, with fast elevators that take workers up to their offices.
Sarah scribbled as fast as he was speaking. She loved this side of him, the dashing, daring man with strong opinions. How she wished she could be part of him again. The thought made her feel slightly dizzy. Mrs. Camden would be back soon enough with the children, and they might never be this close again. If this was what life offered her, she wanted to drink it all in, even if there were proprieties to obey. She would respect them, but take her fill of her intellectual partnership with Theo while she could. She added her own line, and spoke what she had written out loud, to see if he approved. We're on an island. There's no way north, south, east, or west. Instead, we rise. He snapped his fingers.
Perfectly put.
She thought of Daisy's family in their miserable tenement building. If you're going to think in such a grand way, what about addressing the issue of class? How do we help the poor, since we must live side by side on this cramped island? He clapped his hands together.
Yes, of course. This is where the economics work in everyone's favor. The model dwelling would take up an entire block, with every room providing air and light. We did it in the Dakota, with cross-ventilation. Because we're discussing large numbers of tenants within one building, it can be as cheap, if not cheaper, than the miserable tenements we have now, which are dark and dingy and prone to spreading disease.
We marry economics with a grand structure that's solid and permanent.
Yes.
Theo made a fist.
Write that down. Brilliant.
Sarah did, beaming with pride. Theo put a hand on her shoulder and squeezed it.
Here is a speech that I was dreading, and now I can't wait to deliver it. Will you go with me? I want you to be there to see it.
I'd love to. She wore a Polonaise dress in an olive green that Nellie had given her, and felt like a proper lady alighting from the brougham with Theo. There were a number of women in the audience, either accompanying their husbands or present as concerned citizens. Everyone had an opinion on what the west side of Manhattan should look like, and this was sure to be a lively forum. Theo took a seat up on the stage with four other architects, all of whom had at least 20 years on him, with wizened features and gray beards. In comparison, he looked like a schoolboy. The fact that he had been invited up there at all was astonishing. On the hour, the speeches began. Most hailed the status quo, pointing to the grand design of the millionaires' houses along Fifth Avenue as a way of showcasing the affluence of New York City. One insisted that Riverside Drive would be the next grand avenue for the city, due to its prime location on the river and wide plots of land. Many listening nodded their heads. Then Theo rose. He began by comparing the current state of New York architecture to a masquerade, with architects ransacking all eras and countries, and turning buildings into caricatures. The audience members sat a little straighter in their chairs, attentive.
We are like children in a toy shop, dazed with the multitude of opportunities, and incapable of fixing our choice.
The man sitting next to Sarah grunted out loud at this, and murmured something disagreeable to the man on his other side. But as Theo began speaking of the city of the future, the mood slowly changed. Their argument was sound and succinct, and as he spoke of the coming era where rich and poor would have the same opportunities to live in a clean, healthy environment, someone near the front called out a resounding,
"Yes!"
After he finished, the audience burst into applause, several people standing up to do so. Theo's eyes searched the room until he met Sarah's gaze, and a thrill of longing and pride ran through her. They'd done it. Sarah had to wait for 30 minutes until the crowd around him dissipated enough for her to reach him, and he held in his hands dozens of business cards.
I believe our day at work tomorrow will be very different than the ones previous. All thanks to you and your brilliant idea.
The evening was warm, and they walked back to the Dakota together, chattering on about the reactions and the other speakers.
You were terrific, Theo.
I love you.
Sarah stopped. No, we said that wouldn't be proper. Mrs. Camden will be back eventually.
I know. That can't be helped. But I do love you, and it has to be said out loud every so often, or I'll go mad.
I love you too, Theo.
You won't leave me, will you? I can't let you go, now that I finally have you back.
Of course not.
Theo needed her, and she needed him. If she'd learned anything at all the past year, it was to seize the small moments and enjoy them to the fullest, If that meant being in love with a married man, so be it. Theo was hers. Chapter 26. New York City, September 1885. Theo swore under his breath.
I've forgotten the elevation plans.
Sarah rummaged through the leather satchel full of notes and drawings.
Are you sure?
I know I put them in here last night. They were on their way to a meeting with what was their biggest client to date, who wanted to create a handsome office building on 6th Avenue. In the months since Theo's speech to the West End Association, they'd been inundated with prospective clients, and he'd even hired 3 draftsmen to keep up with the demand. Theo shook his head.
I took them out this morning at breakfast to check on the measurements. I left them there, I'm sure of it.
She hated to see him so agitated, but then again she loved seeing his real self, not the mask that he showed to everyone else. They had fallen back into bed with each other the evening of his speech, but with his family still away, it felt natural, an extension of their work life. Sarah was his partner in all respects, and for now she preferred to ignore the fact that he had a wife and children upstate. She leaned forward.
Let me out here. I'll walk back and catch a hansom cab and meet you at the site.
He gave her a tight smile.
Are you sure?
Of course. It's a lovely morning and we've only just set out. I'll be right behind you.
Have I told you how crucial you are to my success?
Every day. He called for the driver to stop. She stepped down and started north on 8th Avenue, thinking through the elevations in her head. The pressed brick building, trimmed in terracotta, utilized a new type of steel column so it could soar tall on a proportionally narrow lot. But without the elevations, the grandeur of the place would be impossible to convey to the client. She hurried into the Dakota and up to Theo's apartment, where Mrs. Haynes was exiting the front door. The woman formed a smile that didn't reach her eyes. Their touching reunion after Sarah's release had been tempered by Sarah's close alliance with Theo. Even though Sarah and Theo were as circumspect as possible, the servants talked. They always did. But Sarah's stint in a madhouse and the resulting notoriety had offered up a freedom that she'd never imagined. It no longer mattered what other people said or thought. Her pain and suffering absolved her from gossip. Or perhaps it was more that she was inured to it at this point, which meant she could do as she liked. And at the moment, she liked being partners with Theo, in more ways than one. Yet Sarah hated to think that she was causing any problems for the woman, who certainly had enough on her hands.
Mrs. Haynes, is there something I can help you with?
No, just overseeing a delivery to the children's room. It's been taken care of.
I see.
She didn't, though. The children's room had been closed up since Mrs. Camden and the children had left. Sarah had popped her head in once when she'd awoken early to climb the back stairs to her own room. The room had an air of neglect about it, as if the only occupants had ever been the dolls lined up on the neatly made beds. Her heart tugged, very slightly, at the thought of the children having to suffer the fright of their mother's illness. But she had pushed it aside, too caught up in the charismatic pull of Theo. They had ventured beyond the rubric and the expectations of society. Mrs. Haynes disappeared without another word. Sarah found the drawings on Theo's drafting desk in the library and placed them in a rucksack. There was no time to waste. But a loud bang pulled her down the hall to the bedchambers. One of the porters, a new one, she couldn't remember his name, stood in the middle of the children's room, unwrapping a large piece of furniture that had been bound in burlap for protection.
Sorry, I didn't mean to disturb you.
The young man smiled at her.
Not at all. Is this the delivery Mrs. Haynes mentioned?
She didn't want him to think she didn't know what was going on, even if she didn't.
Yes, ma'am. A crib.
Her heart leaped to her throat.
A crib for a baby. Could Mrs. Camden have had another child, and Theo hadn't told her? Would he have kept that information from her, knowing it would drive a wedge between them? Maybe that was why Mrs. Camden had been trundled upstate. Not because of illness, but so Sarah didn't find out right off. So he could woo her and pull her close to him again, before breaking the news. She made it to the meeting quickly, after urging the hansom driver to pick up the pace. The horse seemed to sense her nervousness, and stomped his feet as she paid the fare. In the distance, Theo stood in the center of the lot, which had previously held a blacksmith and a saloon. The owners had vacated months ago, and the buildings had been razed. As she approached, he greeted her, and the men all nodded. She handed over the drawings and stepped back, knowing that her role right now was to be the dutiful assistant. Theo was never dismissive of her in front of clients, but the one time she'd made a suggestion, he'd cut her off with a curt, "No, that won't do." Later, he'd apologized and incorporated her idea, but she knew he was right. The outside world wouldn't understand how they worked together, nor approve. The meeting seemed to go on forever, and even once they were back at the office, there was still no way to speak privately. The last draftsman peeled off at 7 o'clock, offering a cheery, "Good night," as he put on his hat and coat. By then, the knot in Sarah's stomach seemed to have tripled in size. She got right to the point, one of the things Theo said he liked about her. "When I was at the Dakota getting the plans, Mrs. Haynes said that your wife and family are returning." Theo sat back in his chair and rubbed his eyes.
"Yes. I'm sorry. I meant to tell you. We've been so busy."
"When are they due back?"
"Next week."
She crossed her arms. "When were you planning on mentioning it? When I bumped into Mrs. Camden in the courtyard?"
"No, no, of course not. I was going to tell you tonight over dinner. But you see, it won't make any difference. Not to our work, our lives."
"How can you say that? Do you really think she'll put up with you running about town and being seen with me?" She hated the way she sounded, like a scolding shrew. Theo hung his head.
"I don't want her to come back. I know that makes me a terrible human being, but that's the way I feel. I love you. We talked just the other day about how we don't care what other people think. But now you do?"
"No. Her pain was deeper than that." She drew a deep breath. "Did you and Mrs. Camden have another child?"
"What? No."
How he could deny such a thing shocked her. "A crib is being set up in the children's room."
"Yes, right."
He came around to the front of the desk and sat on the edge of it, hands out.
"This is why I wanted to tell you over dinner, where we could sit and I could explain things."
She stood firm. "Please do."
"While Minnie was upstate, she befriended a woman who was also ill, who had a small child. The woman passed away, and Minnie said that she'd promised to look after it for her. I was aghast. I don't want another child."
"It will be your ward?"
"Yes."
"Is it a boy or a girl?" She held her breath, praying it not be a boy.
"A boy. They named him Christopher."
A chill went up her spine. When Sarah didn't speak, Theo continued on.
"I wasn't happy about it, but it gives her something to focus on, something that's not the two of us. Don't you see? It was my barter. I keep you, and she can keep the child. It's an agreement."
"You spoke to her of us?"
"Not in an obvious, crass way, but she'd heard rumors. To be honest, I doubt she's surprised or angry. We never really got on. It was all for the family's sakes, hers and mine. She loves the children. That is her passion. I love you. You are mine."
You will live together, and we will carry on, and she'll take care of this boy?
Christopher, yes, you'll see, it's a splendid arrangement.
For you, perhaps. You get the attentions of the devoted wife, while the mistress stays close at hand. He stood, indignant.
You are not my mistress. That's a useless word when it comes to describing who we are and what we do. We are business partners, lovers, all sorts of things. You are an indispensable part of my happiness. I hope I am to yours.
But the boy...
What is one more child running around? I will take care of it because by doing so I get you.
He drew close to her and put one hand around the back of her neck, the other over her heart. A wave of claustrophobia washed over her. Was he heartless or practical? Or both? What he was proposing was outrageous, but she couldn't imagine going anywhere else. How will your wife and I manage? Won't that be terribly awkward?
You'll see, it won't be that bad. We'll have to be careful in the early stages, as they settle in.
Theo, you're mad.
I am, but I know what I want. You by my side, always. I'll do anything I can to make that happen. Now that I'm making money hand over fist, I can take care of you and take care of my family. I want to do right by you.
He touched his lips lightly to her forehead.
Will you try it? If it's awful, I will write you a glowing recommendation, and you can do work for another architect in the city.
No one would hire a woman to do what I do.
I will do everything I can to make you happy. Always. I promise you, Sarah. Will you trust in me?
It's a horrible idea. I can't put myself in that position. I wouldn't be able to hold my head up and walk around the streets.
My marriage, like so many others in our social circle, is solely an arrangement. Times are changing quite quickly. The old guard that monitored what you did and who you did it with is falling. It's the age of enjoyment and money and indulgence.
He took her face in his hands.
Please, indulge me.
She never overtly agreed to the new arrangement, but they went on as they had before, and she braced herself for the arrival of his family. Yet after 2 weeks, she and Mrs. Camden still hadn't crossed paths. Although she'd seen her stepping off a carriage one day and quickly walked around the block, instead of entering at the same time. Sarah gave a quiet thanks to Mr. Hardenberg for the layout of the Dakota. Once she got through the main portal and crossed the courtyard, she was out of danger of running into Mrs. Camden or the new baby, safe making small talk with the elevator operator, who served only her corner of the building. Work, luckily, kept her busy throughout the days, and well into the evenings, so that before she knew it, a new pattern had emerged. Theo never spoke of his family, and she never inquired. They had far more important things to discuss. Theo had gotten another commission, this time for an insurance company in Albany, run by a wealthy financier. It was enormous, 20 stories high, and would bring in a decent sum of money. The steady work and creative freedom exhilarated him, and often when they came home late, he'd stay with her for a couple of hours, then take her to bed and make love to her. He constantly surprised her in that regard, being tender and kind 1 minute, gently kissing the instep of her foot after removing her stockings, before falling on her in a frenzy of longing. She hadn't been to his apartment at all since the family's return, which was fine. She loved her own flat, and she spent far more hours a day in Theo's company than his family did. But she hated it when he had to get up and leave, returning to his own bed, leaving her cold and alone. One Friday afternoon, she accompanied him to the Grand Central Depot, where he was off to spend the weekend in Albany. "Enjoy your time away," she said. "I'll see you on Monday." His eyes twinkled at her, full of mischief.
"Even better, I'll stop in Sunday evening. My train gets in late. but I'll pop up to you before heading home. There was no need to finish the sentence. Sunday evening, Sarah made herself a simple dinner of beans on toast and sat down to read, hoping the book would keep her mind off the sound of his knock on the door. His train was due to arrive at 9:30.